This is a special edition of the USACE 8, 8 questions with an Army aviation subject matter expert. Let's fly with the topic FM3-0, the so what for Army aviation doctrine.
Colonel Eric Pulse, I serve as a director of training and doctrine for United States Army Aviation Center of Excellence.
I'm Lieutenant Colonel Julie McKnight. I'm the chief of the Doctrine and Tactics Division, DOTD.
From an aviation perspective, is the Army's new operational concept of multi-domain operations just Airland Battle 2.0?
No, it's much more than that. In a sense of multi-domain operations, there's nothing drastically new to Army aviation. As our commanding general quotes, Army aviation is the original cross-domain solution since 1956. But where air-land battle focused on two domains and relatively static, predictable threats, multi-domain operations addresses how warfare has evolved to include cyberspace domains, and it is flexible enough to address a variety of potential peer threats. No longer can commanders be successful just focusing on air-land battle, even in combined arms fashion. We must understand the capabilities, the enemy threats that reside in both space, maritime domains, as well as in the human dimensions and the information dimensions across all domains, and how those can impact us.
What are multi-domain operations in a nutshell, and what are the major related aviation talking points?
So the best way I've heard to distill the definition is from FM3O lead author, Lieutenant Colonel Eric Gilgi, the use of all domains in a combined arm fashion. But not just combined arms in the Army sense, but the joint sense as well. While aviation will often be a requested capability, we also need to request higher echelon and joint capabilities to support our missions, especially if they are deep operations.
That's right, Julie. Last year, we've had several Corps commanders come up and say that it's their responsibility to ensure that the combat aviation formations get in and out of the objective area. That is the application of enablers and what is required to do so. Synchronizing enablers across multi-domains so that we can impact the enemy well before they can impact the ground force commander. Commanders must also employ aviation as a maneuver force, one that is enabled, as opposed to being merely the enabler ourselves.
In order to convince our maneuver brothers and sisters to give us a full seat at the table, we, not just our liaison officers or LNOs as we commonly speak, but our pilots in command and commanders down to the company level, need to be fluent not just in Army doctrine, but joint as well. The more our language and understanding nests with maneuver doctrine, the closer we will be to our branch chief's vision of doctrinally and tactically literate aviation leaders who truly understand the schemes of ground maneuver, fires, intelligence, protection, and sustainment, not just the aviation portion.
This leads into our next question on domain interdependence. Why is this so important for aviators to understand?
Well, Army aviation has been part of the land force forever, but we operate in the lower tier of the air domain. Not only can we influence in more than one domain, but we benefit from complementary and reinforcing capabilities from other domains. Take the space domain, for example. We use it every day for navigation, communication, and targeting. How many of us would feel lost without our GPSs in our cars, let alone on a combat mission? Can we conduct complex missions without emitting? We emit more than just radios. We emit more than just sound. We emit energy that can be tracked from many different types of sensors on the modern battlefield.
Operations across domains are so ingrained in this operating concept that FM3O stresses that, quote, all operations are multi-domain operations. And the authors hinted that in the future, the multi-domain verbiage may be dropped because it will be implied. Other things for us to think about in terms of relying on the other domain's capabilities and activities. How will we sequence and position logistical and communications nodes in the maritime and land domains? How will we be impacted by division or core land management, such as FARPs, TAAs, and impact areas? And how do we operate in increasingly congested airspace? Even airspace that is not specifically contested will still be much more complicated than most of us ever experienced in COIN.
Will air ground operations still be relevant in multi-domain operations? How does this strategic context impact aviation missions?
Absolutely. AGO remained the bedrock of our contribution to the division and core scheme of maneuver and our contributions to convergence. More on that in a minute. Regarding the strategic context, Army aviation will always be in high demand, no matter what or where we are in competition, crisis, and armed conflict. Regardless of the context, we provide and enable multiple defeat mechanisms, simultaneously creating opportunities for exploitation by the rest of the combined arms team.
How does the new operational framework apply to Army aviation?
The new framework stresses rear, close, and deep operations and their purpose, as opposed to just thinking about the geography, although one can still refer to the deep area, close area, etc. Aviation is the only force that can operate simultaneously across all three and across multiple echelons. In doing so, we can operate in all of the warfighting functions, not just maneuver and not just fires.
Right, so think about protection. That's something that we can be a huge force multiplier on. Rear area and support operations, as well as sustainment, where we can quickly bypass broken lines of communication, traverse rough terrain, and bring supplies where troops need them, when they need them, where they need them. For example, in the close area, we enhance the survivability of the combined arms team, be it through recon and security operations, hasty and deliberate attack, air movements, air assaults, or any one of our other seven core competencies. For deep operations, we contribute to the intelligence picture for shaping operations as well as for fires. When you think about the deep operation and how Army Aviation will be able to get in, if we have the proper enables, provide five divisions and corps to exploit things in an enemy's rear area using battlefield geometry to get in and get out, we will be successful.
How do our core competencies relate to FM30's new tenets and imperatives?
We have a tenet and imperatives crosswalk that you can find on the USAIS LISCO LPD MS team site, as well as the upcoming issue of the Aviation Digest. That would be the one labeled October to December 2022. It shows which of the tenets and imperatives most apply to each core competency. No surprise here, but aviation meets the ground commander's need in so many of these.
As an example, our core competencies of providing reaction time and maneuver space relates to the tenets of agility, and that the ground force, based on the information we provide, can quickly move forces or adjust their disposition faster than the enemy can. It's also about being able to make decisions more rapidly than the enemy, which relates to the imperative of decision dominance. This core competency also supports the imperatives of seeing ourselves and seeing the enemy, accounting for being under constant observation and making contact with the smallest element possible. Our competency of air assaulting ground maneuver forces supports the tenets of agility, convergence, and depth, as well as the imperative of imposing multiple dilemmas on the enemy.
Convergence is another new aspect of multi-domain operations that people get fixated on. The joke is, if you ask 20 senior leaders what convergence is, you'll get 20 different definitions. To throw another nutshell at you, convergence is the outcome of multiple actions across multiple echelons from multiple domains against multiple decisive points. Aviation can contribute by quickly impacting multiple geographic points on the battlefield through our various core competencies, whether it be conducting reconnaissance and security operations, air assaults, attacks, or extending command and control.
The tenet of endurance, which is supported by our core competencies of air moving personnel, equipment, and supplies, and evacuating wounded, recovering isolated personnel, focuses on friendly combat power. It's not just about sustainment and ensuring a unit doesn't culminate, but also protection and ensuring enough combat power is preserved for subsequent main efforts. To that end, it ties in with the ninth imperative, understanding and managing the effects of operations on units and leaders. This is where the aviation branch has an advantage in our years of understanding the risks associated with acute and chronic fatigue and a culture of fighter management.
Lastly, the tenet of depth orients on enemy dispositions across all domains. It can be described in terms of operational reach, an area where aviation clearly gives an advantage to the combined arms team. Across our core competencies, we amplify depth for the ground forces.
What are aviation-specific concerns regarding contested deployments?
So the bottom line up front comes back to the second imperative, accounting for being under constant observation and all forms of enemy contact, of which influence is now the ninth form of contact. As an army, our deployments rely heavily on civilian infrastructure, lines of communication, and manpower, both on the CONUS and OCONUS ends. Here are a list of things to think about.
Who provides security at logistical nodes, both civil and military? How do we best maintain dispersion at all points? So how we sequence aircraft and assets to each port, how many ports, how many avenues of approach, flight routes come to mind first, but don't forget our ground equipment, a diversity of fuel stop locations, multiple locations at port to prepare our birds for shipment or build them up on the other side. It's a lot to plan for and to command and control. And the bigger picture, how do we simultaneously leverage strat air, sea lift, and self-deployment, and how do we sequence our equipment by platform and quantity? Lastly, focusing on how the information dimension impacts the human dimension. Will we have the civilian support we need, both en route and at the ports, at not just our arrival destination, but even here in the US? Will we have the priority we need for material handling equipment, stevedores, rail, etc. at the ports, or will commercial enterprises take priority?
FM30 stresses maritime operations. What aspects of the maritime environment provide unique challenges or opportunities for Army aviation?
Even more so than in the land domain, we're the division's most maneuverable force. What is the major logistical hurdle for the ground force in the maritime environment? Who are the critical stakeholders for key terrain? Since the maritime domain and the land that is inside of it is usually the most valuable piece, it is a simple fight for us, right? No, simply doesn't mean easy, especially if the airspace is contested.
So some of our opportunities lie in how can we assist the division or corps sustainment plan. But within just that topic, we also have the challenges of how do we position our maintenance assets or FARPs? The choice land will be limited and we'll be competing for division land management priority. So it's critical that we're tied in with the sustainment planners.
Additionally, how do we train over water? From a prime chance pilot who once did over water missions, how do we do this in the modern era? How do we teach our commanders to analyze the risk, provide early and adequate dialogue with their commanders to make sure that we can do this critical mission?
What is the process of developing and staffing and publishing the new Army Aviation Doctrine?
It's a collaborative process. So even if DOTD and USAIS were manned to 100%, we still wouldn't want to stovepipe the development of such critical doctrine to just the schoolhouse. So we had our first working group in January with participants from 166 Aviation Brigade out of Fort Hood and MCTP out of Fort Leavenworth, since they have regular touch points with Force Comm unit exercises. And of course, we had folks from all over Fort Rucker coming to help out as well. Our next work group, templated for May, will involve personnel from both NTC and JRTC, focus on the ATP 3-04.1, or aviation tactical employment, as they have a wealth of hands-on observational experience with units actually executing what's described in the book, so they've seen what works and what doesn't. And once the author's draft is complete and edited, it will go out for worldwide staffing for comments and further development across the aviation force.
And this is important because this is where every cab gets a chance to weigh in on our modern doctrine. It is so critical that folks take a look and help us shape our doctrine that will guide us for the next 3 to 5 years of Army aviation.
Is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
Yes, I get asked a question all the time from most of the people that I go and teach with and or stop by and see their cabs. And it's how do I contribute to changing the Army? You have to write about it, right? You have to read the doctrine. You have to read the digest. You have to read the Quad A articles. You have to read Military Review and some of the other things that we've asked you to read. Digest them and then see if they work out at your cab and then write back to us. The other thing that we need is when you're doing this hard stuff at home station, i.e. home station training before major training events, we need your AARs. The biggest thing that we're trying to figure out is whether we can do what we say we can do. And if we can't, let's make it better so we can.
Thank you for listening to the USAIS 8, brought to you by the United States Army Aviation Center of Excellence.